Call the meeting to order. We will be waiting for a quorum to address and approve the minutes. Ms. Gauthier, what I would like to do, if you can give me a general understanding of how much of the information we still need to cover yet today. We'd like to get through this today, mm-hmm. if at all possible, and so that we can just plan accordingly. So the number of testifiers do you think that we would have?
Mr. Chairman, we will be going through the laboratory services, and then we will go through ag marketing and promotion. Marketing and financial assistance.
Okay.
And then we'll go through value added. So, and then there's the federal, some of the central agency services and also the federal funding that the agency receives. So it's three people because the last person doing value added will also talk about the central services and can talk about the federal funding that comes through the agency.
Okay. So on those four categories, if we would budget about 20 minutes for each group.
Oh, yeah.
That would be plenty. Just so, okay.
I think you can do that, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you. Yep. So we'll get started then. If you would please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm with the Department of Ag. And where we left off in the governor's budget recommendations, I believe, was on page 33 of the governor's document, talking about laboratory services. And I have here with me Gary Horvath, who's head of our laboratory services, to testify to that section of the budget.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, before we start, may I just point out to your members that last time we put in our packet the department's newest flood information hot off the presses. So, as you know, flooding will be an issue this spring. And these documents, one is a one-sheeter that's kind of a handy reference for kind of the overview of what's available generally. And then the second document that has more specifics about what various types of producers can do in preparation. So that might be something we would greatly appreciate. You're mentioning this when you talk to your constituents. It would be a great thing for a e-brief or a newsletter in a little local paper, but just giving some very specific things that people can do, and some of them as easy as, you know, back up your computer.
Right.
And some more complicated about what to do with if you have a dairy farm, a list of things that you can do to prepare for flooding. So I will also send these to you for distribution email.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, but just wanted to point those out. And thank you for your help in passing the word to get people ready for this year.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gary Horvath. I'm the Division Director for the Laboratory Services Division, Department of Ag.
Welcome.
And the Laboratory Services Division's main mission is to provide scientifically and legally defensible data in support of the other Protection Services Divisions. In addition, we do some work for other state agencies, and we have some federal contracts. So I thought what I'd do is I'd go through some of the activities, give you a flavor for what we do, and then briefly touch on the budget and answer questions. One of our biggest customers is the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. Our laboratory has responsibility for doing environmental fate analysis for pesticide residues and their metabolites in ground and surface water. We also recently took on the Clean Water Legacy work, the additional work under that. We also do nutrients, inorganic nutrients in surface waters and groundwater. We monitor pesticide residues and just about anything you can think of as far as enforcement, misuse, accidental spills, human exposure, illegal dumping, that type of thing. We get involved in those cases under the EPA cooperative agreement. And then we'll get involved with some compositional chemistry of fertilizer and lime. We maintain capability. We don't do a lot of samples, but we do maintain capability for that. The other big customer is our Dairy and Food Inspection Division. in there. We do, we're responsible for pathogen testing, salmonella, listeria, E. coli. We were the lab that identified the salmonella in peanut butter, and we're very instrumental, and we feel we have a good laboratory. We do that type of work. Do compositional chemistry, looking at, a product, making sure it is what it says it is. We look at foreign matter, consumer complaints, that type of thing. We also do some pesticide residues. When you get a misuse case, come harvest time, it could become a issue of adulteration, so we get involved trying to resolve those issues. We can also do species identification. Someone selling 100% ground beef, maybe it's got something else in it. We can sort through those types of issues. We do some nutritional labeling verification, and we also do all the pasteurized milk ordinance testing, which is required by the FDA in order for Minnesota farmers to ship milk interstate. We have a smaller program with Plant Protection Division. Globalization. We're bringing a lot of nursery stock and plants from outside of the U.S. With them come hitchhikers, new plant diseases. We have some limited capability. It's an area that has the potential for growth. The department's looking at that, and do we go down that path, or how do we deal with that? And also in that area, we have a seed analysis program looking at purity and germination of seed, some genetically modified traits, although not a lot of that. In addition to those, so those are the three main protection services divisions that we sample for. I'd be glad to answer any questions on that specifically. In addition, 15 years ago, the laboratory entered into an agreement with the Department of Natural Resources. They wanted to close two of their labs, one up in Hibbing and one at Carlos Avery, so we are now, for all intents and purposes, the Department of Natural Resources Chemistry Lab. So we do, for them, we do hatchery permits, their discharge permits, all the work in support of that. We look at nutrients for lakes and stream surveys, fish managers looking at the health of lakes and streams. We also do special like pond studies and special projects that come down the pike. We work with them on that, and we have a cooperative agreement that we sign every 2 years. I think we're working on a five-year one this next cycle, but we enter into that with, and that's the Division of Ecological Services. We also, under that cooperative agreement, we respond to chemical spills and fish kills. If there's a fish kill and there's any type of chemical analysis required, we perform that type of work. Also with the DNR for their Division of Minerals and Lands, we do heavy metal analysis. We're looking at nutrients, nitrates, phosphorus, ammonia, sulfates. We do their discharge permits. They have a number of studies that they do on a large scale looking at remediation of tailings with the interest in metallic mining up there. That's a big issue. So we do all that heavy metal analysis to that comes out of their research up there. So that's a pretty big program for us, and that's again the Division of Minerals and Land Management.
Excuse me, Mr. Hubeck, we do have a question. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And I don't know if you're finished with the DNR part, but I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit how you charge back. Who ultimately pays for the minerals laboratory work and the other laboratory work that you're doing on behalf of DNR?
Mr. Hubeck.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, as I mentioned, we enter into a cooperative agreement every 2 years. We negotiate a price, and we agree to that price. We look at a number of tests or analytes. They're set up slightly different. And then we have built in there, if they go over, we can charge. But basically, it comes from those two divisions. And, we could supply that for you if you'd like.
So, Representative Morrow? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hubeck, you talked about the lab there. Is there any duplicacy, if you will, or duplicative services between your lab and the lab with the DNR that they have, or the lab for the veterinarian diagnostic lab, or is what you do completely separate from what the other labs do?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, there is no duplication. We are co-located with the health department, and we work closely with them collaboratively. If we get a request for a test that we don't do, we work with our customers to send them to the proper person, and that's worked out very well. The DNR lab, as I understand it, is really a wildlife and fish pathology lab, and they basically look for disease and that type of thing. And if they suspect a chemical is involved, then we'll receive a tissue sample from them, and they do not have that capability anymore. And I think there's a pollution control lab. It's an air lab. We do not do any of that. So to my knowledge, and the vet diagnostic lab, we explored maybe taking on some of that work. There's some real issues as far as logistics and the timeliness, and it was determined that that would not work out well for either of us, but we do not do that type of testing.
Thank you. Mr. Horvath, thank you.
It's okay, Mr. Chairman. So moving on, we do enter into, we have the ability in state statute to capture costs from small projects, so we'll occasionally get samples. Like, we just finished a cooperative agreement with Pollution Control Agency. They wanted to do some, I'll take a step back. With DNR, we're also the lab that does the fish contaminants, mercury and PCB. We also do that work for them. So PCA wanted to do some additional work over and above, so we entered into a cooperative agreement with them, and so we do that type of thing. We'll get samples, for instance, a criminal investigation for criminal apprehension involving pesticides. Since we have that skill, they don't really do much of that. Those will come to us. A lot of times that's just, you know, gratis. We'll do it, and if it turns into something big, we charge, and we work back and forth. We try to, you know, minimize the amount of bureaucracy there, and it works really well for both labs. They'll sometimes help us out. So we'll do things like that. We also have two cooperative agreements with the U.S. Department of Agriculture Ag Marketing Service. One is the pesticide database program, and that program is we do all of the water, us, Montana and New York, do all of the water work for pesticide residues. And what that program does is they sample commodities, and in our case water, and we look at low-level residue work for pesticides, and then we will, that data is then given to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and is used in risk analysis and setting the tolerance for, total exposure. We also have a microbiological database program through the same agency, and that's looking at the prevalence of pathogens in fresh produce. And a lot of that is more method development, and it's kind of in its infancy, whereas the pesticide program is much more developed. We also have cooperative agreement with both USDA and FDA under what's called the Food Emergency Response Network, or it's referred to as FERN. And that is, we're one of the seven original labs, and I think it's grown to about 13. And we provide testing for chemical and biological agents that could be used in a terrorist attack on the food supply. So we do method development working with these select agent pathogens and very toxic chemicals. We verify methodology. The FERN chemical network has been activated a few times under the melamine, if you recall, mm-hmm. in pet food and then later in milk protein. We were, because of our participation in that, we were very well situated to respond immediately. In fact, we identified a couple products from Vietnam that were still on the shelves that contained melamine and initiated a federal recall. So we have, that provides us equipment and the knowledge and capability and the networking. So it's been a very valuable program. We also were activated, our lab developed the quick method along with Connecticut for polyaromatic hydrocarbons and shellfish. And again, all of that, bolsters our ability to respond for things in Minnesota. So basically, that activity you know, benefits the citizens, obviously. We, you know, I think we have a good lab. It's protected the citizens. We quickly can identify outbreaks and that type of thing. And it helps our mission in protecting the food supply and environment from accidental misuse, exposure of chemicals, and looking at emerging plant disease. Going on to the budget real quickly, the thing I'd like to point out is our general fund, $3.8 million. I'd like to point out that 51% of that goes to pay down the bond and run our building. So it's almost $1.9 million that we pay in what we refer to as rent. And so that's a huge, you know, part of our general fund exposure there.
Excuse me, Mr. Horvath. We do have a question. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for indulging me at this. I just wanted to go back to your testing procedures in your lab. In a situation where there was a pesticide chemical drift, and would you be taking tissue samples and running those through your lab, or how would you know, we get any proof of a pesticide contamination on products?
Mr. Horvath.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in drift cases, it really depends on the circumstance. If it's a direct drift onto a, like a person, we might get their clothing. If it's drifted onto their house, we do wipes. If it's onto another commodity, we would get the commodity. Oftentimes, there are no methodology for that commodity because the pesticide is registered for the product. The product that it's registered for, there are methods available, but not for the non-target commodity, so our lab has to come up with that. But it really depends on where that went, what it hit. It can be a variety of things that we look at to prove a drift case.
Representative Szymanski. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may be the only one interested in the mundane issue of methods, but could you forward perhaps to the committee if that's the wish, but I would like the methodologies that your lab employs. You probably have a couple pages of that or something. not the whole method, just the number, just how you reference those.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can try to supply you. Are you interested in the drift type methods or water methods, or we've got
your list? I'm most interested in the environmental methods that you use. As a former lab director,
so like water and soil and vegetation
and fish tissue, etc.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you,
Mr. Horvath.
With that, if there's no questions on anything, I think I'm done.
So, any additional questions, members? So, with time to spare, too, I want to thank you for that. And yeah,
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to extend the invitation again, and I know your committee discussed this earlier in the session, but we would love to have you come over and see our labs at any time. We're very proud of them and the way that we work together with the Department of Health. So give us about 2 hours' notice, and we'll be ready.
Yeah, wonderful. And we're going to take you up on that as well. And we're hoping you'll get that street finished right out front. But
we're working on that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I digress. I tease there. But Mr. Horvath, thank you. And like we said to the earlier testifiers, you know, when you're doing a great job, we seldom hear from it. When you're doing a poor job, you know, we will hear about it, and we haven't heard much from your area. And when the commissioner was here as well and talking about the mission of the department, you know, he spoke to upholding the integrity of the food supply, and I've spoke to that as well, and I know a number of our members. So we want to thank you for the job that you're doing and the people that you represent here as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass that on.
All right. Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Ms. Gauthier, next testifier, please.
Yep, with that, I'd like to bring our Deputy Commissioner, Jim Boerbaum, down to talk about ag marketing and development.
Mr. Boerbaum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, I'm Jim Boerbaum, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm going to cover the two budget activities that are under promotion and marketing. The first budget activity is ag marketing services. The second budget activity is agriculture development and financial assistance. Those are the two divisions that we announced the merger on last month.
Mr. Chairman, sorry to interrupt, but just for members, we're on page 39 in the governor's document. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, the under the budget activity Ag Marketing Services, there are really four programs within this budget activity. The first is to assist in the orderly marketing of Minnesota's agriculture commodities and products. Secondly, we promote Minnesota products both in domestic and international markets. Staff in this division provide economic analysis related to market opportunities. And fourth, we provide market services to producers, processors, and consumers. And I'll give you some examples under each one of these four areas. Some of the activities that our staff work with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as well as commodity councils and trade groups. We participated in 11 international food shows and 86 international trade events, as well as we've hosted trade officials from 60 different countries. Some examples of some activities that offer economic analysis. We have Sue Yee in within this division, and she does a profile of Minnesota's agriculture industry and its contribution to the state economy that is updated every year. That information is on our website, and it's really one of our best documents that talks about, again, the economic contribution of Minnesota agriculture to our state. We have staff that provide technical assistance and economic analysis of renewable fuels. As you well know, there's lots of conversation this year as well as in 2008 on food and fuels. We do so also have staff that support activities that support producers, processors, and consumers. And some examples of that is we have our livestock development team within this Ag Marketing Services budget activity. This team of individuals, supervised by Kurt Zimmerman, works directly with the producers to help coach them or mentor them through the environmental review process, or if they're looking to upgrade or expand their livestock facility, they can coach them through the permitting process. We also have staff in this division that administer our dairy business, dairy development and profitability program, as well as our dairy business planning grants. One of the more popular programs in this budget activity is our Minnesota Grown program. There is a great growth potential in that. Our current directory of Minnesota Grown, we have 840 farmers and small businesses. The benefit of this is that both producers as well as consumers can enjoy an economic and nutritional benefit of locally grown produce. The spending for this budget activity is shown on page 41 in your budget document, and the governor's recommendation for the next biennium and 12-13 biennium is actually $6.2 million. And some of the highlights on those numbers, about $1.9 million of that coming from general fund monies, $1.8 million from agriculture or dedicated funds, and then $2.5 million from federal funds. The money is spent, largely about $4.3 million goes into staff and operating costs. Part of that is rent as well as salary, with about $1.9 million, again, being in pass-through grants. Examples of that is our dairy development and our dairy business planning grants. That's a very quick summary of our Ag Marketing Services activity, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer that.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
I'm always good for when I know, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I'm fascinated, Mr. Boardman, on a fact on page 40, yep, that agricultural exports to China will double in a five-year period. If you could touch on that and talk a little bit about how this funding may have a role in promoting exports to China and elsewhere.
Mr. Borbom.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow, the role of our agency is actually we partner with the Department of Employee and Economic Development. The Commissioner of Agriculture has a primary responsibility to promote agriculture products, but we do partner with DEED in that initiative. China continues to be one of our growth opportunities. I think if you look at Mexico, China, Japan are about equal partners right now, but again, when you look at economics and growth, the potential is in Southeast Asia.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Warburton, a skeptic or someone naive might say, well, can't the crops sell themselves? Why does the state or federal government have to assist? Could you give a little background or shed some of your experience on why that partnership is important?
Mr. Warburton.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I would be honest in admitting that I have limited experience in working with trade delegations. I do welcome them and host them when they come to Minnesota. We have a couple of our staff, Sue Yee is another example, and Shannon Borenson, who are very seasoned individuals, and the big difference in working with the Chinese officials is to develop a personal relationship, and that takes several visits or conversations with them, both as we go there and as well as when they come here. So I think it's all about developing personal relationships. And the other part of it is that trade is a two-way process. So we need to remember that selling Minnesota agriculture products might be our goal, but also they're looking to sell some of their products to the U.S., and so we need to recognize that.
Ms. Amaro, thank you. Representative Schmanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Borbom, you mentioned the Minnesota Grown program. Last week when the Minnesota Grown staff was here, they popped up the website with my location on it and noted that I didn't have any photographs on there. The photographs are there now. So,
Representative Schmanski, you have no shame. No, I'm teasing. I just
but, yeah. But I do have a question.
Representative Schmanski.
Mr. Borbom, in your key activities and goals on page 40, it lists Minnesota's pork, dairy, poultry, and beef production will grow by an annual average of at least 2% from 2010 to 2015. Is that a goal, or is that a observation of a measurement that you've taken?
Mr. Borbom.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schmanski, I would say that is a goal to see a 2% growth, and I believe when I look at, again, 2% growth in the next 5 years, I would say that's a modest goal.
Representative Schmanski. Okay. Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, you touched on China and the importance there, and a little bit closer to home. Could you talk for a second, Commissioner, on Cuba? What's our relationship with Cuba? There's talk at the federal level of relaxing some of the trade restrictions with Cuba. How do we stand in that relationship?
Mr. Borbo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I have not had a conversation with our current commissioner about Cuba. Previous administrations have had made trade missions to Cuba. So I do know that there is, again, potential when you look at some of the Minnesota products would be like our beans and some of our soybean products and distillers dried grains, I would think are examples of some of the Minnesota products that would be welcomed in Cuba. And so, you know, we've had a history with previous administrations of making trips to Cuba. I need to have a conversation with our current commissioner about that position.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I can just interject to a point of information, our staff that handles most of our export activities would have been here last week, but now she is in Dubai at a trade conference. So if you would like to have her come back in the future, I'm sure she would be very happy to talk about Cuba, China, all the other places in the world where we are looking and working.
Very nice. We'll probably take you up on that offer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Beerbaum, in the historical perspective, it says licensing, bonding, and auditing programs are more important than ever when sellers and buyers of ag products are no longer neighbors but strangers. How important, how much do you work in regard to the new initiative that was put out by the Department of Revenue in auditing small businesses out in the country? Because I've got a lot of businesses in my area, small ag businesses that are just being, quote, hounded by auditing. And these are ag people, and yet it's just the Department of Revenue showing up. And they're miles apart in what they're trying to do. And I'm just wondering, do you guys work together with the Department of Revenue in doing this, or what?
Mr. Borbom.
No, Mr. Chairman and the Representative, we do not actually. In that case, revenue is looking to collect delinquent taxes or tax revenue. Our licensing and bonding is really permitting grain storage facilities to make sure that that they have the capacity to cover an obligation, a sale of a grain product within 24 hours. So what our warehouse examiners do is, first of all, when they go on site, they look to make sure that the product that a farmer sold at an elevator is covered under the Chicago Board of Trade, that again, the grain elevators are not speculating on grain, but that when they buy product from a farmer, they turn around and sell it on the board so that contract is covered. The second thing they look for, again, is to make sure the financial health of that that elevator is stable enough so that if I'm a producer and I sell grain to that elevator and I ask for a payment on that grain, that I'm going to get my proceeds. So that's what we license and bond for. And that's much different than what revenue does.
Representative Anderson. Thank you. Before I call on the next question, I would like to recognize the ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School. They, too, are participating in the Voice of the People program. So welcome to the Ag Committee. And be prepared to identify a testifier because you're next. I'm going to be calling on one of you, okay? All right? That's how it works in this committee. I'm just teasing. Representative Szymanski, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Borbom, kind of going back to the previous question that I asked you about the 2% growth in the livestock industry, what do you anticipate the department will do to achieve that goal of 2% growth annually in livestock over the next 5 years? Are there plans in place? Where are we going with this?
Mr. Borbom.
Yep, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I would be happy to answer the question focusing on the three types of resources that we currently offer. One is, again, our livestock development team that works directly with producers to help them make sure when they do need to upgrade their facility that they comply with the feedlot rules. So we've got that direct coaching or mentoring. We also offer some grants through our dairy business planning grants and other low-interest programs so that, again, when you have producers that want to make an investment, beginning farmers especially are challenged with equity and cash flow, and so grants and low-interest financing offers that as well. And then I think, again, going back to the third thing I would offer is then the market assistance, both the domestic and international markets. We've got great talent and great staff that can work with producer organizations. So I would say those are three examples.
Representative Szymanski. Right. Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Mr. Borbom, when you mentioned bonding for grain elevators, it brings up a point. I think it's in Illinois where with farmers being encouraged to buy fertilizer way ahead and hedge themselves and whatever, and putting out a lot of money buying fertilizer, for example, a year ahead of time, any talk or discussion about somehow protecting farmers who would do that, and if that fertilizer company may go bankrupt, is there any discussion about that kind of protection for farmers?
Mr. Borbom.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have not had that discussion. I can see that is a risk. That's a very real risk when producers go that far out. And a lot of times producers, because of their tax situation, they prepay. And once they get into that mode or that model, then it's very hard to move from something else. I'd be happy to talk to industry members and just see once. There's other states have various models on how to protect grain buyers, and we can look at some of those models.
Representative Anderson? Please, Mr. Borbom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I would move on to the second budget activity under promotion and marketing, and that begins on page 42 of your budget document, and that is ag development and financial assistance. We have staff programs within this budget activity. We essentially sponsor research and demonstration projects to improve environmental quality. We offer outreach and technical assistance to Minnesota growers. And again, we provide low-cost financing to Minnesota farmers. And I'll give you some examples under each one of these areas. With respect to those activities that support water quality, we have a staff that partners with individuals as well as farmers and farm organizations in the University of Minnesota. We've installed 30 conservation drainage practices on 14 different farms. The objective of these practices is to determine how the design of these drainage systems improve water quality. We also some examples of activity that offers outreach and technical assistance to Minnesota growers. We have a staff that's partially funded from partnership with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and that individual writes grazing plans for some of our beef producers in the western part, northwestern part of the state. We also have a profile of successful farming practices that support sustainable agriculture and organic growers through grants and demonstration projects. That information can be found in our green book, and that's also on our website. We have employees that sponsor an annual organic conference each year. We've done that for about 6 or 7 years, and I believe that conference last year in St. Cloud was attended by more than 500 people. So we've, again, see a tremendous interest and growth in organic agriculture. That same staff also administer grants to 90 organic growers who work, essentially receive a scholarship to participate in the Farm Business Management Program. And for lenders and people that want to transition from conventional to organic farming, there is a fairly high cost, and to get some financial analysis is very difficult. And so this is a way to capture some of that financial information. We also have staff in our, within this division that manage and staff our biological control and plant pathology containment facility. This is a greenhouse that's located on the St. Paul campus, and it is one that has been supported by the soybean growers as well as many other nursery industry folks, and so a lot of great work being done in that facility. And Mr. Chairman, I'll close with some of the financing programs that we offer them within the division would be the Sustainable Agriculture Grant and Loan Program, the Agriculture Best Management Program, and the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority, again, are examples of financing programs within this division. The level of spending, again, can be found on page 44 of the budget document. You can see the governor's recommendation is at $4.77 million versus $5.54 million the previous biennium. A big part of that change, again, is reflected in the savings that we will achieve, again, through the merger of these two budget activities.
Thank you. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your narrative, it says something about your general fund appropriations. You got federal grants and then dedicated funds. What are those dedicated funds?
Mr. Borber.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the dedicated funds are statutorily created accounts, and Steve Ernest can probably explain this better than I can, but they're statutorily created accounts where the revenue for those accounts comes either from inspection fees or license fees, and then the statutory language allows us to spend the money for a specific purpose or program. So it's money in that we receive, again, for inspection fees or licenses that, again, is dedicated for a specific purpose, and that's written within the statute.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bierbaum, you said inspection fees. You must have, then, a group of FTEs that go out and inspect businesses throughout the state as far as agriculture or farms, or is it strictly like you mentioned earlier, just ag, the farming, or is it retail also?
Mr. Borbaum.
I'm looking at this. I'm trying to decide on examples of dedicated accounts under ag development financial assistance, and I might have to call on Steve Ernest to help me out with this. But typically, the examples of inspection fees is going back to our dairy and food division, but we have food, feed, meat, and dairy inspectors, and a dairy farmer would pay a fee, or license fee, an annual fee as a dairy producer to have a grade A or something like that. And again, then the staff activity for that inspection then is supported from that dedicated account. So that's again examples out of our dairy and food, and this division I'm struggling to find a good example.
So, Mr. Ernest, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Finance and Budget Director at the agency. The most interesting dedicated account in this area would be the Minnesota Grown account, where people pay for using the Minnesota Grown label or for advertising in the Minnesota Grown directory. We also have promotion councils where we collect a little money to run their elections for them, to help them manage their elections. It's a very limited role we play with them. And then we have some livestock weighing money for inspectors to be at the plant and watch that process. Those are the three accounts that are in the agricultural fund. And Mr. Chairman, I was going to mention also, you'll get another version of the agricultural fund statement with the forecast. You should get that today probably.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker.
Still early in the session. Who knows?
I knew you were a climber. But
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernst, the Agriculture Fund, is that strictly to the dairy or the cattle industry, cattle portion of agriculture? Is it broadened into the area of chemicals and corn and beans and the or is it just narrowly focused?
Mr. Ernest.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the Agricultural Fund is a variety of about 15 accounts, and most of them are in the protection program that we talked about the other days. There's the pesticide regulatory account is the biggest one. Fertilizer has its own account. Seed inspection, seed potatoes, nursery and phyto, fruit and vegetable inspection, apiary, commercial feed dairy services is a big account also. Each one is created separately in statute. The fees for those activities are dedicated and go into that account within the fund and can only be used for the activities for which they were collected.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernst, who sends out then the notice that pesticides? I have the reason I'm bringing this up is because this weekend I had about a 3-hour talk with a retail business person who sells pesticides, not only retail for just the garden people, but for also people who are agricultural as far as applying them. And he received a notice December 13th saying he has to pay back taxes on it. Of course, I'm getting back to the internal revenue, but his supplier of his pesticides was given notice back in September of last year. He didn't get the notice until December. And the excuse was from whoever sent him the letter was, well, you fell through the cracks. And I'm just wondering if it comes from the Department of Agriculture or what area that deals with pesticides, because it was specifically a pesticide and they basically had to scramble to try and meet the deadline that they had and had to bring in new people to help them find out this financial difficulty.
Mr. Borbaum?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to visit with you after the committee meeting just to learn more about that event and that situation to see what we can do to address that. So.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. So, any other questions? Mr. Borbaum?
Yeah. That concludes my remarks.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Gauthier?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This brings us to our value-added products, and testifying on that will be Mr. Ernst. And we're on page 47 of the governor's document. This activity is our bioenergy products. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
So, please begin.
Mr. Chairman, this program is, again, about a third of our general fund. There's one big appropriation. The program value added starts on page 45, and that just shows the two sides of it. Again, the ethanol side, bioenergy products, and the agri side, the next gen and other programs, which I'll get into. Page 46 combines them to show where we're coming from because it was all dedicated to ethanol before. We have a base of $14.7 million each year, and that we were appropriated $9.9 each year the previous biennium, but those cuts were one-time cuts. It says one-time appropriations. It was one-time cuts, so they appeared back in the base by law, by the law that was written 2 years ago, and a year ago, the cuts. And so the governor's budget cuts this program by 30% to contribute to the 15% general fund cut for the agency. Turning to page 48, you see the bioenergy side, which is the ethanol producer payments, where we have $15.014 million this year associated with the ethanol producer program to pay the deficiency payments. And the chart we went over when we talked about the change items you should still have in your folders that showed kind of the history and how we're going to finish that this, the first year of the biennium, the plan is.
And members, Ms. Gauthier was just holding out the one up. There you go. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we discussed this earlier, and this is about the governor's recommendation that we pay off those ethanol deficiency payments all in the first year of the biennium.
Yes.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chairman, in the second year, the second side of this program is the agri program. This program was codified in statute only recently, but on page 48, you'll see some of the history of the main programs that are funded by this. NextGen Energy got $3 million in fiscal 2008, and the Livestock Investment Grant Program got $1 million, and then $1 million again in 2010. This budget leaves $5.4 million in the second year for those and other programs in that the money would be allocated to in consultation with the legislative chairs.
Yes.
And then if there are no questions on that, I would move on to the last program, administration and financial assistance.
You know, I believe we covered that pretty well earlier on. Yep. So, yes, please proceed.
So on page 52, our last program, admin and financial assistance, starts, and there are basically two sides to this, our grants and assistance side, and then our agency services side. Page 53 shows the numbers combined, but I think in this program, the two sides are pretty different. Grants and assistance starts on page 54, and we kind of talk about these as pass-through money. Some of them take a little more work on our part to pass them through, but we have the biggest ones I'll point out are $634,000 for the dairy profitability and enhancement grants and teams each year. There's $500,000 each year for the milk grants for the food shelves. These are discussed a little bit in the narrative on page 54. And $474,000 each year is for assistance to the county and district fairs. We have $235,000 each year in here for the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council, which is housed at the University of Minnesota. And then we have some smaller amounts to the Livestock Breeders Association, the Northern Crops Institute, the Minnesota Horticultural Society, the Turf Research Council. And those, Mr. Chairman, I was asked to provide a summary of how their missions fit in with ours, and I apologize that I did not bring that with me today, but I will send that over as soon as possible.
Thank you.
The detail on the amounts of those are all in the system that your fiscal analyst could print out. The one other big item that's shown on page 56 is $4 million a year, which is just reduced from our base. That was our $4 million for the disaster response activities. It was just a one-time $4 million, so it just has to be subtracted out. And that's why we show the spike of $6 million in fiscal 2011. And then starting on page 57 is the agency services activity. And this is all our internal offices, the commissioner's office, which leads the agency, the finance and budget office, human resources, information technology, and then we have an office of agricultural statistics, which partners with the federal government agricultural statistics program.
Mr. Chairman, if I may point out the flood information that we handed out at the, and I mentioned earlier in the hearing, is an example of something that our agency services division would produce. So we're the staff that are working on emergency preparedness response for the flood, along with our communications staff, are producing, this is the kind of service they provide for producers, for Minnesotans, the public at large, Mr.
Right.
Chairman.
And members, Ms. Gauthier did say early on that it would be good for us to send out, whether it's news releases, press releases of some sort, updating the public of this information as well. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the funding here I would point out is on page 59. We have about half from the general fund and half from the what's called the Miscellaneous Special Revenue Fund. That is our agency indirects So that is collected from the fee accounts to help support the overall agency services that help all activities. We have 54 FTEs, but only about 17 of those are funded with general fund. And that is all I have on that activity, unless there are questions.
Yeah. Any questions, members? No, seeing none. Thank you. I just might be able to get some lunch today, so appreciate it. All right. You rose to the top there, Mr. Ernst.
Thank you. I would just point out the last few pages of the budget book. Starting on page 60, we have some narrative describing our federal programs, and then a table which shows by division and program, by program and budget activity, what each of the accounts are, and there is a column there that states whether it requires a match or not. If you'd like to know the percentage, some of them are 50%, some of them are 30% or different that require us to match those, I can provide that. And then the last page, page 64, shows our revenues. I would point out that we do bring in $3.2 million to the general fund each year, and most of that is in food revenues, retail food fee that we have a request in here to increase by 15% brings in about $1.6 million each year, and so we're asking to increase those fees by 15%, and that would increase our appropriation from the general fund because those monies will go into the general fund. And then our agricultural fund, all the fees bring in about $21 million per year. We have about $9 million per year in federal money that we expect to get. And again, the miscellaneous special revenue is mostly our indirect accounts.
So, Mr. Chairman, if there are any other questions on our federal funding and our agency revenue summary, we'd be happy to take those. But otherwise, this would conclude our presentation of our budget.
Members, any questions? Any questions? Fantastic.
So did we make our time?
Yes, we did. Ms. Gauthier, that's great. So all we appreciate it. And to all the testifiers coming up over the last couple of days, thank you. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for the testimony that you provided. Obviously, we're going to have to make some difficult decisions on, you know, address the budget. But, no, we appreciate all the testimony. And the whole point here is to, like we said, uphold the mission, uphold the integrity of the food supply, and convey that back to our colleagues as well. We do have a quorum. We had a quorum about 24 after, just for the record. We need someone to make a motion to approve the minutes dated February 24th. And Representative Franzen moves the minutes of February 24th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Tomorrow, members, we're not going to meet tomorrow. I'm going to be meeting with some others as well to start working on the budget with the agency and the governor's recommendations and moving a bill forward. Representative Morrow, excuse me. Oh, do we have that yet? Oh, the Board of Animal Health, is that next? Okay, you can make your way up here as well. Representative Morrow, I know you and I, if we can get together on a bill that you're wanting to work on as well. So we can get together maybe tomorrow if you'd have some time so we can do that. And so, Gauthier, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chairman.
Welcome back. So
happy to be back.
Yes.
I'm putting on my other hat now, Mr. Chairman, as Government Relations Director for the Board of Animal Health. And we are here to present our budget, which should be on a tab in the governor's budget document. Our change item is just one, and to go into our overall budget and change item, I have Dr. Bill Hartman, who's state veterinarian and executive director of the State Board of Animal Health.
So, Dr. Hartman, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Bill Hartman. I'm the executive director of the Board of Animal Health and the state veterinarian. We're going to provide you with a brief overview of the board's budget currently, and then Dr. Thompson, senior veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health, is here with me to talk about the governor's recommendations for the Board of Animal Health. So I'll talk a little bit about the current budget the Board of Animal Health has, so you're familiar with that first. The board receives approximately $10 million per biennium in appropriation for the general fund, and of that, $200,000 is spent for our Yoni's disease program, in which we assist cattle producers to minimize the impact of that disease on their herds. We receive $800,000 of that for our farm survey programs, and that helps us do surveillance for tuberculosis and chronic wasting disease for those producers. And then $5 million of the $10 million appropriation is for our effort to eradicate bovine tuberculosis from northwestern Minnesota and return the state to TB-free status. So that's 50% of the board's budget is for that effort with TB. And of that $5 million, $1 million is for producer payments for producers that took the cattle herd buyout. So we make annual payments to them to stay out of the cattle business until we're done with the TB program. Then we have three other sources of revenue at the Board of Animal Health. The first is in 2009, there was a one-time $1 assessment on the sale of cattle, and that brought in approximately $970,000 into a fund that the Board of Animal Health manages for the bovine tuberculosis program. Secondly, we collect inspection fees from our farm survey producers annually, and that brings in about $90,000 per biennium. And finally, most of the programs that we work on are federal programs. They're national eradication programs of national scope, and so we work cooperatively with USDA, and we anticipate in the next biennium that we would get about $2 million from the federal government in cooperative agreement funds. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a brief look at our budget. It's not very complicated. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I would turn it over to Dr. Thompson to talk about the governor's recommendations.
Okay. Dr. Thompson, please.
For the record, my name is Beth Thompson. I'm a senior veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health. First of all, I'd like to direct your attention back to page 4. I'll talk just a little bit about the numbers that are located on that page and then go into the board's plan for dealing with the governor's recommendations for this next biennium. The direct appropriations from the general fund for fiscal year 2010 were $5.152 million. Fiscal year 2011 went down slightly to just over $5 million. So the total for that biennium is $10.25 million. The recommendation for this coming biennium per year is $4.841 million for a total for the biennium of $9.682 million. And this is a decrease for the biennium of $514,000 total or $257,000 per year for each year of the biennium. Now, it's the board's intention to deal with that downward decrease in the appropriations in four different areas. First of all, as many of you know, we have employees not only in our St. Paul office, but also employees that work out in different geographical areas across the state of Minnesota. We have one district veterinarian after 20-plus years with the board who will be retiring this year. And it's the board's intention, instead of hiring somebody for that geographical area, we will reassign and the other district vets will absorb that area for that district veterinarian. Secondly, I'd like to turn your attention to northwestern Minnesota. We did enjoy a TB status upgrade for the majority of the state to TB-free in October of 2010. And that zone that's located up in northwestern Minnesota was upgraded from modified accredited to modified accredited advanced. With that upgrade, the need for 60-day or movement testing for feeder calves coming out of the greater modified accredited advanced zone has been eliminated. We still require testing for the calves coming out of the smaller management zone where TB was discovered. But for the greater zone, that testing requirement is now gone. Secondly, if you take a look at some of the programs, the aspects of the TB eradication efforts, two aspects, the fencing and buyout programs, went into place in 2008. Now, the bulk of the work for those two portions of the program has passed and has tailed off for our employees, thus affecting the job duties for our employees that are located up in that area. I'd also like to mention the cooperation that we've seen from the producers in northwestern Minnesota. I started with the board in the summer of 2008, and the number of questions that we get in the office from the producers and the amount of assistance needed by our employees up in that area has dropped off significantly. And the success of the TB program in Minnesota is going to be due in large part to the cooperation of those producers.
And now, I'm sorry, I just want to say thank you. So, yeah, thank you, yes, thank you, thank yes. you, a thousand thank you. So, yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, taking into account everything that I've said about the TB program, the elimination of the testing for feeder calves, mm-hmm. we have two employees located up in northwestern Minnesota that were hired specifically for the TB eradication efforts. Those two employees are on three-year contracts, temporary employees. Those contracts will be up this summer, again the summer of 2011, and again it's the board's intention not to replace those two employees. Lastly, and again in northwestern Minnesota, the need for overtime hours has dropped significantly. No longer are employees needing to help out with whole herd tests on Saturdays or Sundays, and the 10, 12, 14 hour days are gone for our employees. So those are the board's intentions for dealing with the downward adjustments in the governor's recommendation for the coming biennium. And unless Dr. Hartman has anything to add, that's the end of my report.
So thank you. Any questions for members? No. Thank you so much. Like I said, if you do good work, a lot of times it goes unnoticed, but no, not in this case. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Scouthier, are there any other departments, any other testifiers that I'm missing here today? All right.
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So, well, with that, members, just wrap up tomorrow. Representative Eakin and I will be meeting to discuss a few things and as well. Thursday, we do have some bills up, so be watching for that. And it is co-op day on Thursday. All right, so they'll be visiting our committee as well. And with that, members, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.